And so far as the Greek tragedies are concerned, I mean, you've worked with Sophocles, Philoctetes, and Sophocles' Antigone. What led you to choose those plays in particular?
Well, undoubtedly, it was the conditions we were living in, or have lived in Northern Ireland. They were intensified and made melodramatic and extreme from about 1968 to 1996. But anyone who grew up in North of Ireland from their moment of consciousness was aware of, if you like, a public dimension to their lives. They were bonded into a group, one side or the other side. And they were also living in a personal, private, intimate, the theatre of your own conscience and consciousness. So the demand for solidarity was there from the start with your group. And if you were growing into some kind of authentic individual life, the imperative for solitude or self-respect or integrity, self-definition, was there also. So there was always that little, sometimes, quite often, an ill fit between the group line, the party line, if you like, and the personal condition. And that is precisely what drew me to, certainly to the Philoctetes, where the hero, or well, he's not so much the hero, he's the young fellow, Neoptolemus, is caught between the demands of loyalty and solidarity. He is a soldier on the Greek expedition, and so he has to help the cause. But in order to help the cause, he has to do something which infringes his own sense of truth and justice and self-respect. He has to tell a lie to this wounded man. So it's that friction between the demands of the group and the demands of the individual integrity. Same thing, kind of thing, in Antigone. I actually resisted Antigone. Antigone was done so often, it has become more an issue, set of issues, than an actual play. And to tell you the truth, that's one of the reasons I changed the title. I changed the title of Philoctetes or Philoctetes because I wasn't quite sure how you pronounced it, among other things, but mainly because it was being toured in Ireland to certainly non-classical people. It was being brought into all kinds of parish halls and art centres, and as my mother would call them, the common five-eighths were coming in to see it. So there is a miraculous cure at the end of the play, Philoctetes. The wounded man is cured. So I thought that phrase, the cure at Troy, the word cure has for both sides in Ireland, north and south, there can be, if you like, faith healing cures, or there can be miraculous cures at Lourdes and Holy Wells and so on. So it gave it that kind of, if you like, anthropological dimension. Similarly with Antigone. Antigone is so politicised in Ireland over the last 40 years. I mean, it's been politicised forever. Well, 150 years anyway in the West. But Conor Cruise O'Brien famously used the Antigone situation as an analogy for civil rights versus law and order in the 1960s. And he warned that if you take the non-violent protest civil rights position, you are likely to unleash violence, which is clear in Antigone. So the Bernadette Devlin figure in her politics in the 1960s was the Antigone figure. The people on the marches for civil rights, were they keeping faith with the kind of pieties of belonging to a different group, their domestic, their cultural, their hearth culture, if you like, was offended by the gerrymandering and so on. Anyway, that was present. And of course, that continued. And then with the feminist movement, understandably, the treatments of Antigone became to be related very much to the vehemence of the women issue in Ireland, where there was a terrific, understandable righteous fury. So there's very high voltage, political voltage, hanging around the figure of Antigone. And many seminars, you know, much political discourse. So the play was hijacked into, if you like, a discourse around issues, into the culture wars of the 70s and 80s and early 90s. So I was kind of tired of that, you know, in a way. Well, because when you thought Antigone, you thought all that. And then when I thought of this title, The Burial at Thebes, I mean, once again in Ireland, and I think everywhere in the world still, the word burial still retains a sacral first world force. It can't quite be ironized out of existence. And I wanted to call attention to that sacred side of Antigone's motives. But also that there are several burials. Antigone is buried alive. She buries the body ritually of her brother with the dust. And, you know, it cuts in all kinds of directions. Deaths of the queen, of Haemon, of herself. Haemon also, along with Antigone, is buried in the cave. And it's an issue. And in fact, it was an issue in Northern Ireland. I mean, this was not at all in my mind when I did the play or gave it the title. But I've thought since of a moment very close to my own home during the hunger strikes in 1981. The second hunger striker to die in that IRA campaign of hunger striking was a guy called Francis Hughes, whose parents lived very close. I knew his father, I knew his brothers and sisters. I didn't know him. But he died in the Mays prison. And, of course, it was a highly emotional time. He was a little Billy the Kid killer, no doubt. But it was inflamed politically. So the army, the security forces, took control of the... After he died in the prison, they took control of the body and didn't allow any of the family or the local people who were near there. They delivered the body to Tunbridge, which was a few miles away from his birthplace. So there was kind of outrage at that. And it was the same kind of thing, that there was kind of crayon action there, that we're taking charge of this body of a traitor, if you like. And at the same time, there was the Antigone laws of the dead, of the family, piety and so on. So there was kind of analogous energy on the ground in the north of Ireland for all that.